Hello, everybody, and welcome to UCB Long Form Conversations, the what used to be the UCB podcast.
That's right. That's right. My name's Will Hines, and I'm staring at a man named John Frusciante.
And my name is John Frusciante, and I'm gazing longingly into the eyes of a man named Will Hines. Holy crap, we're back.
Yeah, that's right. So it's been a year and 2 months.
Yeah.
We last did an interview with Matt Besser in August of 2011.
Right.
After that DCM. And then what happened?
We just got lazy.
We got lazy. We got disorganized.
No, I'll tell you exactly.
Oh, the website rebooted, and technically we had to hold off for a little bit. But then we allowed that as an excuse for us to never get our crap together.
Yeah, we used that as a crutch.
That's right.
Yeah. And I just want to say thank you to everybody who... came up to us and asked us when we're going to do the podcast
again. Right, lots of improv students and lots of people in general were asking about it really nicely.
Carl Reiner called me.
Is that a bit?
Yes.
It's a pretty good bit. That's a pretty good celebrity reference. Let's introduce some people. Our guest today is Tim Martin. Hello, Tim.
Hi, guys.
Tim is going to be our guest back. And then also, we have a podcast intern, Sypha Sounds. Sypha here, say hi.
Hello.
So this is ridiculous that Sypha is a Sypha does the morning shift on Hot 97, one of the biggest radio stations in the country.
Morning show. Morning shift sounds like I'm like a peon.
Oh yeah, or it sounds you're like a high Hawaiian shirt wearing you know.
The morning show on Hot 97.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the irony is
we can't even get that right.
No, we're just going to even that shows why this is backwards. So Sypha, who has more experience than me and John times a million, is recording the podcast.
Right, while we have not even allowed him to have a microphone.
like Michael Caine, who's an improviser at the UCB, not the British actor, but the UCB improviser, pointed out it's like having Mickey Mantle be your bat boy.
Right, which is true.
Yeah, so that is ridiculous. But thank you, Sypha, because he's got better equipment and has already upped the production value of this by a million. And Sypha was an enthusiastic supporter of this.
Yeah.
And also a reason why we're doing this.
Yesterday was Eminem's birthday, and I put a picture up. And on Facebook, got 12 likes. And then I put a picture up of the equipment I was going to use for the return of the podcast. 70 likes.
70. What kind of social media power? 70 likes.
More than a picture of Sypha with Eminem.
On
Eminem's birthday.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
So thank you, Sypha.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, definitely instrumental. And also... for podcast fans, hardcore podcast fans, I want to almost bittersweetly announce that we are no longer in a tent. We are not sitting under a canopy.
Right, we're not under a green screen over a little Zoom H2 recorder.
Right,
We're on the stage of the UCB Theater.
That's right.
Now.
Right now we are.
In UCB so corporate Chelsea.
Now. Mm-hmm.
Sell out.
Really sold out.
Yeah.
Yep. So there'll be no swearing, and we have to plug
Red Bull.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Crocs.
DVD collections in Seventh Heaven.
All right, well, let's get into it. Our guest, as Will said today, is Tim Martin.
Mm-hmm. The only way you could bring the podcast back.
Yeah, that's right.
Me. We had to go with that heavy hitter. Tim has been on Harold Knight since...
2009.
Yep. So he's been on Harold Knight. He currently performs on the weekend team Airwolf and also Diamond Lion.
Diamond Lion, the musical improv team, and Airwolf, the first weekend team at UCB East.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. And Diamond Lion's that's mostly a UCB East team.
Yeah, that's Fridays. Right now, Friday nights at UCB East. Yeah.
So you're like a pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
You're like out at UCB East, blazing new ground, winning over new audience members. We'll talk about that. That's interesting.
And he's appeared on a ton of internet videos and commercials and things like that. So... Tim, welcome.
You guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's get right into it. How did you get started at improv? How did you find this place?
Well, I got started in improv in high school.
Okay.
I grew up in Iowa. For some reason in Iowa, they have what are called an Iowa speech contest. There's a bunch of categories that you can do. So there's like after dinner speaking. There is,
What decade is it currently in Iowa?
The 50s.
Right.
Just the 50s. Like, in Iowa, Mad Men is a sci-fi show. They had like, all these categories you could do. It was run by like one of the lit teachers, and one of them was improv. And so that's when I started doing improv at first. Then I got away from it. I didn't do any theater or anything in college. The theater kids all terrified me. It was like a real cult.
What college?
How so?
It was Wheaton College outside of Chicago. It's this liberal arts Christian college.
Oh, boy.
Real into Christ.
Okay.
And, really? Wow.
That's your family religious?
Yes.
Yeah, you grew up in kind of a religious environment, right?
Yeah. So I got away from theater then. Then I moved to D.C. I was pretending to be a journalist. And I started...
Oh, I did that.
Did you do that?
But not as well as it sounds like you did.
I wasn't doing great.
Okay.
I had a job, but...
What was
everyone,
the job?
Everyone would look at me and just know, like... I think I was the only one in the office to not get a promotion. And right. I was completely understood that. Like, during the 3 years I was there, yeah.
Okay, so you pretend to be a journalist. Well, just what kind of job
what
was it?
What specifically was it?
It was, I was a producer and, like, a researcher for this tiny PBS program through WNET in New York. And it was specifically about religion and ethics.
Wow.
Yeah. So I would do that.
What was it called?
Religion and Ethics. It's a very PBS, straightforward PBS name.
Okay.
So while I was there, wasn't having the greatest time. And I started I went and saw Mitch Hedberg at this comedy club there. Like, it was like maybe like 6 months before he died.
Wow.
And he was amazing.
I've heard a recording of him at a DC club.
Yeah.
It
might have been, it was so good. I had such a great time. And then walking out, my girlfriend at the time, she saw a flyer for classes there, for improv classes. She told me I should do it.
Was this Washington Improv Theater?
No, it wasn't. Oh, it was, I would end up meeting a lot of those guys, and a lot of us would move here into New York, but like around the same time at the end of 2006. But it was at the Improv Comedy Club, which is not known for improv. It's a chain of like comedy clubs that host stand-ups.
Like the improv.
The improv. So that's where it was at. And this guy, Sean Westfall, who became one of my best friends, he teaches classes there, short form classes. And I remember like going to my first class, we played Zip Zap Zop, and it was like a religious experience for me.
Really?
Was it really?
It was.
Like, what about it was so striking?
Like, looking other adults in the eye and being just real silly with them, saying gibberish to me, was such a great feeling. Hmm. And, yeah, it was awesome. I think if you've lived in D.C., you might even understand more how weird that is, because everyone there is so serious about themselves.
I've only had brief visits to D.C., but I remember going to, like, around happy hour time into a bar and being amazed at how many, like, blue blazers, khaki pants... Like, it looked cartoonishly buttoned down and conservative.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a company town, but the company is, let's go to an office and sit at desks.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, New York has a wide variety of careers here, and I don't know, D.C. seemed to be more like...
It's like three careers. It's like you're either, you work on the Hill, or you're a journalist.
Covering
the
Hill.
There might be two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I started doing it there. Loved it. It was like the only thing I loved. And then... We started coming up to UCB to do this team I was on. We were called Bright Young Things. We made a long form team. Came up and did the marathon 1 year.
What year?
2005, I think, was the first year. It was the last year you guys did that march. Do you remember the march?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was insane. And
talk about that.
So the marathon used to be.
So Del Close Marathon is the once a year improv marathon at UCB where there's over the years, it's increased in size, but it's like started as 48 hours, and now it's like 1,100 hours or whatever.
Yeah, 56.
Improv round the clock at all the UCB theaters and other things. Okay,
yeah.
Right, so
we come up to New York. I'm also like wide-eyed, never really been. I think I'd been in New York once, maybe. So I'm already like just impressed as hell by everything and very like, you know, like just overwhelmed by the city. And it used to be every team that was in the marathon, you are assigned like a street corner to go stand on, and they're spread all throughout the city. Where did it start? Somewhere down like below Canal, maybe?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where it started.
So the first group is given a street corner somewhere way downtown, and they are told, get a suggestion from a passerby, like some stranger.
That's right. I think this was Owen Burke's child. I think this was Owen Burke's, who used to be the artistic director of the UCB and now works for, what is it, Gary Sanchez Productions?
Yeah.
He works for the Funny or Die movie production.
That's right.
Whatever. Yep. But he was AD at the time, and he loved like big theatrical, gotta say yes, bro, just do it. Go for it. Like super kind of hippie positive about improv.
I think it might have started before him, I think.
Street ritual is what we call this.
Okay, yeah.
It was before Owen?
I think.
He was into it. I know that.
I know he was totally into it, but I think it started before him.
Okay.
Yes. Anyway. So that team gets a suggestion, and then they just do something with it while walking towards the next team. And I think maybe up Broadway, I can't remember. But so they, I don't remember. So
there was a route that was announced beforehand. Like there was a team at Astor Place. I think it was roughly Broadway.
Okay.
Astor Place, and then like Union Square, and then you know, yeah. heading towards the theater.
Yeah. So we were in Union Square. So yeah, whatever. And then so they move along. They keep picking up teams along the way. It just turns into like, you know, a big mass of improvisers basically just yelling shit. I remember we were standing.
That's
at,
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we were standing at the corner, and all of a sudden, like, I hear what I knew had to be them coming up, chanting Alan Thicke as loudly as they could. And I was like, oh, this is it. I was just so, it was, like, overwhelming to me again. Like, how, like, I was like, we're doing it. These are, like, we're all improvisers. And so we get in this big parade, and we march, just march up the street and act like idiots and, like, just screaming anything. It felt so, like, impulsive to me in a great way. And like, I remember, you know, somebody was sitting on their fire escape outside, and like, we just started yelling at them to jump. And then we were like, no, don't do it. Just like, thought we were so hilarious. And then a paddy wagon showed up next to us and kind of tracked us and didn't really know what to do with us. Anyway, then you march, everyone gets picked up, you march all the way into the theater, the UCB4 standing on stage, they welcome you. And that's what the press conference kind of used to be. It would end right. with all of us marching in onto the stage of the
UCB. Right, that was the start of the marathon.
Yeah.
So as if the marathon of improv was started by a suggestion in a passerby at Battery Park.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And sort Besser of. Would like interview you about what the suggestion was. And,
yeah. Huh. Yeah. I always remember thinking that was a cool idea, and it even sounds fun when you talk about it, but I always hated it. I remember feeling like I had to do it or I wasn't being a real improviser. I don't think I was a teacher or anything, so I didn't like have to.
Yeah,
right.
But I feel like I was
this is the kind
being
of stuff
a whip
now,
if I didn't do it.
Yeah,
I would
yeah,
hate
you're
that
missing
now.
Out on
like,
something.
Even talking
Can you imagine
about it,
now?
I'm like, what
it,
I hate that.
I do that every year, just uh-huh. running up the...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess it does sound pretty cool. And if you're coming from out of town, that would be pretty awesome.
And so I'm glad you got away from those college actors that felt like they were a cult.
That's the thing, yeah. I was like so afraid of it being culty, and now I'm in like the greatest cult. Yeah.
Super cult.
So, okay, so what was the long form that your team did?
We
the Bright
did,
Young Things.
We did a form where the second you got a laugh, you edited out of fear that like you weren't going to get any more laughs in that scene.
Okay.
Right.
That's
right.
Almost like an annoyance, like an annoyance kind of thing, almost.
That's the, that's the most sarcastic way I could say it. I love those guys. I now don't want them to hear that I just said that, cuz I love that team. Mm. But we were like I remember
that's really common for your first long form group, especially if you come from a culture where there isn't
exactly
an established good long form team to give you bravery.
Exactly. Right. And
like,
we were
you
funny
see like, a team that does it every weekend, it works. Yeah. You gain patience by saying, "All right, we see it working." But if you're in a vacuum and just being like, well, we read this book,
mm-hmm.
we think it's supposed to work like this, mm-hmm. it is terrifying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what the whole, like, that's the whole idea of, like, game is, like, was so eye-opening for me. Because it's like, no, once you find that funny thing, like, that's where your scene really starts. Like, that's, you can keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, like, we didn't have any, like, we would get a laugh and be like, that's why we did the scene, to get that laugh.
Right,
now
right,
let's
right.
start. Now let's try to start something completely new.
Right.
Which is so much work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what were you drawing from? Like, who were you? Did you just read Truth and Comedy and try to emulate that? Was there anybody giving you workshops or coaching sessions or anything?
We read Truth and Comedy. I think Improvise had come out, that Mick Napier book.
Yeah.
We liked
probably
that
knew.
A lot.
Yeah, that was around 2005. Yeah.
And then we took a workshop. Gary Austin. You familiar with Gary Austin?
Sure, he's the Groundlings guy.
Yeah. He teaches workshops. We took a workshop with him.
Yeah. I read an interview with him like a year and a half ago. I don't know mm-hmm. too much about him. Mm-hmm. But he started Groundlings, basically. He did stuff for the committee in San Francisco, and he was mm-hmm. one of the early Groundlings guys,
yeah.
if not the founder.
Yeah.
I should know.
Okay, so... Oh, go ahead.
No, yeah, go ahead.
So skipping ahead from that, what's the move from... What's the decision to move from there to New York?
And so 2006, come to the marathon, I see Death by Ruru do a show that I think everyone... especially that who saw it, still talks about where during the marathon they did their form Fucked Up Family.
Yeah.
They interviewed a kid who was like 17. I think his story was he was basically in a car with his family and there was an accident and everyone died but him. And so...
That's the story.
That was the story that he told.
Wow.
This place, like the theater was packed. So it was like Saturday night. There's so many people in here. I remember I was standing... against the back wall, and
I bet you it was Friday night at 11 because I think they were still a Friday night team, and the marathon times corresponded
with
their actual times.
Okay, yeah.
So I bet you it was Stepfathers and then Ruru. This is before I was on Stepfathers, but Ruru was a Friday night team at that time. Mm. This is the 2005 marathon.
2006.
Yeah, they were still definitely Friday at 11. They were new. They were like a relatively new team. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because yeah. So it was like. Completely full theater. That kid tells that story. It's heartbreaking. And he goes and he sits back down, and he was sitting in the front row, and I could see him. And they, Jackie Clark and Curtis Gwynn, each grab a chair and put it down.
Oh my God.
And they are start in the car.
Oh.
And everyone saw that, and there was this collective, just the loudest laugh I've ever heard. It
just
was
like
amazing.
We're going to start right at the most awkward part.
Fearless.
The most horrible
it was
part.
That, seeing that, I was like, it crushed me. It was the coolest and funniest thing I'd ever seen. And that kid who I could see laughed harder than anybody. He loved it so much.
Amazing.
And the whole show was like that. It looked like it was so cathartic for him.
Uh-huh.
And so being able to see him on top of just how funny they were being anyway was like, again, it just was like, I wanted to do it. It felt just amazing to see people do that. I wanted to do that. So I didn't go back to New York for 2 weeks. I found a job here so that I could kind of like start meeting people and finding a roommate and just set myself up. And so I quit my job from New York. They were like, Tim, you got to come back or we have to fire you. Like they were really nice about it, but they were like, Tim, you have to, you can't keep taking, because I would do it like a couple days at a time. I would keep calling back and being like, I'm still in New York. I got this job. I PA'd for The 10, that David Wayne movie.
Yes.
That's the job I got. I was a PA on that.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
So I was like, bringing, what's his name? Liev Schreiber. I was like bringing him coffee. That was my job.
That's funny.
Then I went back and got my stuff and then moved up here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once you start getting, what was it like to start taking classes here for you? Like, what was the experience? What did it feel like?
It was good. I was impatient with it. I had done improv for a while at that point. So I started off really just wishing I could, skip ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I see now, like, it was great that I didn't. You meet everyone you're going to perform with by going through the classes. And also, I wasn't as smart and funny about improv as I thought I was. Right.
Not sure. You were good. I saw you in your 201 class.
Oh,
that was
really?
A super strong 201 class. I subbed one day. It was you, Abby Jacobson, Amber Nelson was in that class. It was a Curtis Gwynn 201.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm forgetting other people. I remember thinking, this class is stacked. Mm-hmm. And you were good then. The class was good. I remember
it was a good class.
Was really
it's
good.
A common feeling, though, for people who have a lot of experience with improv coming into like a new situation, like taking 101 at UCB. There's a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
You know, it's thinking like, well, I'm better than this, or I, you know, like it's hard to slow yourself down and start back from that spot, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was for me. And then it was good. I'm really glad I mean, the classes were everything. It taught me everything. And so then.
But it took a while before you got on Herald Night.
It did.
You sort of became like one of the, from what I remember, kind of like prominent good people, and then weren't picked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For 3 years or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Was there
like
three auditions where you were?
There were two, and it was scary. I knew that's kind of what I thought that's where I stood, and it was terrifying to be in that position because it's like, no, I'm gonna be someone that's like, well, I remember you.
Yeah,
we're around. You know?
Yeah.
Which for me was scary because I really, really wanted to be on UCB stage. It's like the reason I came here.
So what makes you keep going even though you have that feeling or have that realization?
You know, I just got to the point where it was like I knew I loved doing it, but I don't know. I just had to find other places to perform. Mm-hmm. I started doing a play. It was also good to like, after a while you get, I mean, it really can get culty. And it's nobody's fault but your own, really. Like, but it was good for me after that. My auditions, I remember, were the callbacks especially were horrible. I still to this day don't audition all that well, I feel like. Mm-hmm. So I remember like that second one. I remember like it was just rough. It was really rough.
What do you
remember? Think Delaney. One of the I can't remember if this is the first or second time I had that callback, but I remember Delaney had his coat on. And I was like, that guy, like, he's ready to leave. Like, he's not seeing what he wants to see right now. That guy's out the door. And rightly so. Like, it was just, I remember, like, panicking. And I did the thing where you're like, you should probably never do it anyway, but you definitely shouldn't do it when you're in a callback to be on a Herald team where it was supposed to be, like, we were, like, two soldiers behind in a bunker, like, behind the chairs. And then the people we were going to attack were, like, on the other side of the chair. So they were a little ways away.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're in a classroom, so they're not that far away.
Right.
So I did the desperate thing of being like, those guys can hear us. I mean, they're right there.
Right.
Like,
right.
And like deep into the scene.
So yeah,
it's like
yeah,
already
yeah.
established, like, no, they can't hear you.
Yeah.
It you was just
definitely
such a
never do that
thing.
Ever.
Although I can feel the, it is a common improv thing to never play dumb. And if you can really hear it, to acknowledge that you can, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
people
yeah.
are talking into their phones. Uh-huh. And at first you pretend to not hear it, and then you're sort of taught, no, you can really hear it, so you should react to it.
Well, it depends on what the parameter of the scene
I can just see under an intense audition situation misfiring
yeah.
on the play to the top of your intelligence. You can really hear it, so your character can hear it.
Yeah. Sure.
Versus commit to the reality of the
yeah.
thing you're creating.
Well, I definitely picked wrong. I think that's when Delaney zipped his coat up. Like, checked out the snacks you guys had one more time, right. and then, like, stood up and
like
left.
Like, got up and made himself just, a plate.
Yeah, just stepped over me and started ripping open bags of chips.
How about Oscar bait? You were on that movie class. I feel like that was, like, a big part of your,
that.
Like, kind of
pre-Herald
team.
Yeah, absolutely. That was huge. That gave me a ton of confidence. That was one of the first... It was the movie form, and it had been brought back. It was like this. The movie form was like a thing of it was like lore, right? Like improv lore, because no one had done it for so long, and the teams that had done it were like really well known, like Feature and Instant Cinema.
Yeah, long running show at UCB Chelsea back on 22nd Street was.
Feature was an enormous show. All the big people of the theater did that around like 2000, 2001.
Yeah,
and then Instant Cinema, like 4 or 5 years later, probably
yeah.
right around the time you were going to your first DCM was
yep.
running.
Mm-hmm.
And that was big.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you in Oscar Bait, because Oscar Bait did a spank and
yeah.
got a run,
yep.
right? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and I remember seeing you in Oscar Bait and being impressed by you and thinking you were definitely like a standout amongst a pretty, you know, solid
yeah.
cast.
But I think Oscar Bait also became like a thing for all the people in it were people who weren't on Herald Night but
yeah.
had been around.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys
kind of
held on to each other
yeah.
as, well, we will be something.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're going to do our shows, and we're not going to wait for
yeah.
Anthony King and the UCB Theater to put us somewhere.
Right,
I think.
Right. Yeah, that's
felt
exactly
like that.
Right. Yeah, which was like it gave us so much confidence, I think, and we became so close. And like, it was a great group of people. It was like Josh Patton.
Every time we
Cutler.
Do this, we leave somebody out.
You
every time
go
we try
it?
To
yeah.
name
was
everybody
it Lauren
on the
Adams
cast,
and
Lauren
yeah.
Adams,
yeah.
are we going to
yeah.
try to do it?
Do it, do it.
So Josh Patton, you got to help.
I'm not going.
Okay, I'll try for.
I want to say.
So Josh Patton, I think Jessica Stickles. Matt Cutler,
mm-hmm.
Eddie Brawley,
yep.
Lauren
uh-huh.
Adams. Was Jubin on it? No.
I don't think so. Was Jeremy on it? Jeremy
Bent?
Bent?
No.
No.
Thank You Robot was manifesting at that time.
Okay.
But, wait, no. Hang on. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wait. You, Josh. I remember just seeing you, Josh, and Cutler around all the time after that together.
I think that's around the same time we started playing Golden Tee at McManus, so that's why another review around constantly.
Jeez.
And that was a big part of your improv development too, right?
Absolutely.
Golden Tee at McManus.
Yep. Ignoring everyone for 2 years, dumping tens of thousands of dollars. You got three more.
I'm not going to be able to do
Glidewell.
It.
Glidewell?
Oh, of course. Good heavens.
Panagiotopoulos?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rory Panagiotopoulos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rory Panagiotopoulos. I just want to prove that I can still say his last name right.
Right. It's a rite of passage.
You're learning how to
Tony
say
Rodriguez.
His last name. Oh, right. Yeah, man. Good group. Good heavens.
A really great group. Yeah.
I've never seen you guys do a good set at Parkside Lounge, which is like the... It's impossible to do a successful improv set, or I had believed.
It's the only time I ever did a good show there. Was that that Oscar Bait show.
Yeah.
It's like Parkside Lounge, the basement of the Triple Crown. Those are like
no, there are good shows
like,
there now.
There are?
That's been the vibe has been beaten.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
That
but
place
initially,
been
initially
been
that was true.
It used to be such a nightmare place to perform.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were doing that, and you said that was really helpful for you just in like confidence-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's the thing I would like. You got to get a group like that, I think. Unless you're put on, especially if you go through your first auditions and you don't get on something, you got to still find a way, or you'll just get depressed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to find a group of people you can still perform with and like perform, like people that you like and perform with them as much as possible so you don't get depressed and then also you don't start, you know, slipping like in your improv.
Right.
That was such a good team for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so how long?
I remember too, though, like the movie form. So I think Anthony King hated the movie form.
I don't know the way actually.
I remember it. And it's because it's a real meta form.
Mm-hmm.
You're always like stop. You're always like, especially the way we were doing it. You like kept like doing cut twos and like close ups and all the arm, like, you know, like all the weird framing devices that you do.
I don't remember ever having a conversation with him
really?
Where he expressed hatred for the movie form.
Okay.
I don't know what Anthony thought, but I remember it felt like it was tough, John, you as the artistic associate could speak to this if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it was tough for improvised shows to be successful Spanx. Like things that had been really successful yes. class shows or really successful indie groups, like really good people,
yeah. mm-hmm.
would put together a Spanx and it just would, they didn't get picked a lot.
Right, it's yeah. tough, and this is something that we will address in our Rumors and Myths episode that we're planning.
yeah.
That's true. Yeah. But it is like, to be as brief as possible about it, your show has to have a hook that appeals to an audience of people that
to
have
get
never
people in the theater,
right? People who have never seen improv before, don't care what improv is. Like your 600 or your advanced class show could be hilarious and be filled with a ton of great people, but if your show isn't, like, for lack of a better term, marketable, you know,
that's a good term, I think.
If your show isn't marketable to an audience, You can't think about, like, what's going to make this community laugh. You have to think, like, yeah. what is going to make New York City laugh. And yeah. that's why it's tough to jump that hurdle from successful advanced show to running show at the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Oscar Bates, so where are we in the life of Tim Martin now, the improv life of Tim?
How long
so
then between I, there and Badman?
I think so. Like, Oscar Bates through the end of 2008, 2009, I think I had another audition, just bombed. And so I was like, all right, I got to just get away for a little bit. I started doing a play. I started doing Ivanov, which is this Chekhov wow. play.
Mm-hmm.
It was with a UCB guy, Jacob Knoll. He had a theater company, still yeah. does, called the Miscreant Theater Company. Their thing is that they tear plays apart. They try to, like, just mess with plays, change the lines and the blocking and the character, mm-hmm. like the takes on characters. So I did that. I had so much fun doing that. I got a call one morning. I thought it was the stage manager for that show. It was Anthony King. I screened his call because I didn't have the number and made him leave a voicemail. So he's like, Tim, Anthony King, why don't you give me a call back when you got a second? And I called him back right away. And I remember, like, yeah, I just remember. I was shocked, and it was awesome.
So you replaced on Badman to replace somebody.
Sean Clements left. He went to L.A.
Right, right.
So I got put on Badman.
Mm-hmm.
You were a mid-season replacement. This yeah. is in between auditions.
That's yep. right.
Yeah.
So you made it to callbacks, didn't get a team, and then how many months later got that call?
I'm not sure. A couple months, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's still like Chelsea and Craig Rowan was
yeah.
still on the team,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Mike Still. Mike Still.
Trisha McAlpin.
Trisha McAlpin.
I'm not doing this.
Was it Nate Smith
yeah.
on Badman at the time? Yeah. So it was
Corey
you,
Brown,
Nate,
Dave
Corey.
Siegel.
Oh, yeah. Dave Siegel, Chelsea.
That was such a great team.
Yeah.
We got to do such cool. We got to perform at the Friars Club.
One of the great yeah. things about being added to Badman at that time is they were one of the hot Harold teams
oh, yeah.
at that time.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So you're just sort of like thrown into this great situation.
It was, I remember coming out, getting a suggestion. All the improvisers are standing there. They, huge cheer, because everyone knows, like, all the improvisers know when you get yeah. put on your first Harold team. Huge cheer. I think I blacked out. I really did. I really do like feel like I blacked out when I remember it. Then I came. So then I get the suggestion. I don't remember what it was.
What was it?
What's that?
What was the suggestion?
I don't remember it.
Oh, you don't remember?
Yeah,
what
I
was.
Do not remember it. But I do remember the very first scene is Craig Rowan and Mike Still go out, and Craig's like, Coach, why are you making
yes,
me learn?
I remember this
why
scene.
Are you making me take? Or Coach, I'm done with these ballet lessons. And immediately Mike Still is like, but where's your grace?
Yeah,
something like that.
And it erupted.
The largest roar, yep. like just a huge roar,
that
and to be on stage and feel that.
Yep, that was a great. I remember
so,
watching that
so
show.
Good.
I remember where I was standing. That yeah, that was a great. It was like a great scene.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when I was like, oh God, I'm never gonna be as good as these guys. That's immediately how I felt.
Really?
About it.
Right.
Just immediately shit on myself.
Okay, so how did you like? How did you deal with that? Like, what was it that sort of got you out of that?
Badman itself got me out of it. I remember like everyone on that team was so cool because they'd been on a bunch of Harold teams. They just weren't nervous anymore. And they were like our warm up. Oh God, the Badman warm up was intentionally as awful as possible. It was not a warm up. It was see how awful and like annoying and just and like make no sense we can be in a way that was really like bonding.
Uh-huh.
The story with Badman, like originally Badman, they were going to call themselves. The original name was the Peeners.
Yeah.
And
you're unveiling a huge, secret mythology here. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I think like 11th hour, somebody made the call like, don't call yourselves the Peeners, which who cares now?
Right.
But I mean, at the time, for some reason, it was like, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too much, too far for an improv team.
I think you would have regretted it.
Yeah. I would have loved it.
You sure?
I still love it.
3 years later?
Yes, absolutely.
You were on the Peeners?
The Peeners, yes.
I don't think
you
were like
that. That's a pretty great thing to be able to say.
I think I would
be proud as a...
It sounds good now in an interview. I think about 20 minutes into that actually being your name, you know that was a mistake.
I'm going to say, as a former member of Badman, if I had gotten a call from Anthony saying, we're placing you on the Peeners, I would have loved it. I guess it'd be
a good like self-selection. Like anybody who can't take being on that team shouldn't be on that
Absolutely.
Team. And I would be among that group.
If
I got the phone calls like, you've been put on the Peeners, I'd be like, all right.
Are you kidding? Oh, man. I would have been like, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. You're right, though. The mics are going to go off, and I'm going to be like, Will, you know what? I was wrong. But I remember, like, so that was the attitude of just, like, we don't need, almost to a fault. I remember, Will, once you noticed after Harold Knight, you were like, you guys are all, you're like all spine and no brain. You're like all you're like all just twitch, like nerve endings. You're just like pure like animal, but there's no like developed cranium. You know, there's no like, you just need a little bit of brain.
Yeah.
You didn't even want us to have a full brain. You're like, just guys, just have a little bit of brain in your stomach.
Like a lizard brain.
But
yeah.
I remember like one of the first nights, I was so nervous for those first month or well, year probably of Harold Knight, but like Nate Smith came, saw me mm-hmm. and he walked up to me and he was like, he's like, you nervous? And I was, and obviously I was like by myself away from the team, like in that yeah. weird space between doors, between like the green room and then where you walk out over there.
Oh yeah.
By myself, just staring at a case of beers. and Nate's like, you nervous, man? I was like, yeah, I am. And he grabbed my arm and he goes, you're going to fuck up pretty bad.
Really?
He's like, yeah. He's like, just know that. You're going
to
fuck up.
To take pressure off you, he was saying that.
He was
yeah.
saying
like,
it, yeah.
Don't be thrown when
exactly,
that happens.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Be aware.
He knew that it was kind of a fun thing to nail me for like what I was thinking in my head. Just right. to be like, yeah, exactly what your fear is. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So once I think that night was like one of my first good shows. It was like, it did take the pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's very good at that.
Yeah.
Okay. So skipping ahead a little bit, Badman goes through like a bunch of iterations,
mm-hmm.
right?
I think we had 16 people on the team.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then, so while we were still on Harold Knight, we changed the name to Airwolf. Right.
Yeah. So we had finally gotten to the point where no original member of Badman was on the team.
Right.
Yep.
And then Airwolf moves to UCB East and becomes a weekend team. Right. So
yeah.
What?
Just real quick for improv nerds listening, Badman had descended from Bangs.
Yep.
Right.
Badman initially was a big part of the team Bangs, which was a terrific team.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you're just interested in improv lineages, the way like some like Dillinger goes into Shoves or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't even know the current. I know Maud Night like Gramps has become Dinner, or whatever. Like
right.
teams sort of morph.
Yeah.
Bangs became the original version of Badman,
mm-hmm.
but now had become a totally other,
yeah.
refossilized version where new particles have assumed the shape of the old animal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Now, John,
yeah.
you.
Okay.
Sorry.
So yeah. So in that, like, how do you? What was your reaction to that? Like, what did that feel like?
Which
you, like being. Oh, finding out that like now this team is going to be a regular Saturday night team.
I loved it. I was so proud of us. Mm-hmm. I remember like we were doing great Heralds, and I was just really proud of us that we got to move there. It was scary. No one knew what that new theater was going to be like. It's a very different space.
Mm-hmm.
We also were like at 7:30 at first.
Right,
which felt like a weird time.
Yeah.
Turned out not to be like all of our fears were not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's the difference? I ask this, I think, of everybody, but what is the difference? And I guess in the way that you approach it, what's the difference between being on a weekend, doing a weekend show, and doing regular Harolds? Because it's a completely different animal, those kinds
yeah.
of shows.
I think it's what you were saying earlier of like, you know, you don't, like on Harold Night, you get like a lot of cheers and stuff for, in a good way, like it's awesome, but for just like, like moves, you know, more like
good improv,
interesting improv moves. I feel mm-hmm. like really like, you know, like an organic transition or something like that,
mm-hmm.
or yeah, stuff like that. And I think the weekend, it's just about, you know, making them laugh. They don't care because they don't even know they just saw the sweet move you made. You know, like the
right.
sweet like swinging door that you just
they don't
did.
See the technical aspect of it as much of as a Harold
yeah,
Knight
exactly,
audience
yeah.
does, or as much as students do. They
yeah.
see the like, oh, this is very funny what you just said, or it was like a good joke, or it like
I see the, like, if you do an interview like we do, for instance, like, oh, I see the way that they are making fun of this part of the interview. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you
right, know, right.
I remember this detail, and I see how it's being presented.
Yeah.
How does it change, like, the way you do it, though? Does that change, like, the tops of your scenes? Are you trying to more explicitly use things like suggestions so it's clear to the audience how you're using it?
No, I think for us, it's been get to it right away. I think for Airwolf, it's been, like, our scenes are so fast, usually. I mean, yeah. I think, like, the Time Out New York, even when they reviewed us, that's how they described us. It's just, like, something about how fast our scenes were, and they tried to compare it to the helicopter Airwolf. But, yeah, it was, like... just getting to it. Yeah. And another thing it does is week to week, your crowds can be so different. I mean, like, and it makes you more confident in that way that you, like, you just for no, like, it's just some weeks you're, they just aren't into you and you just still have to be able to do like an hour long show and pull it off as much as possible. So whereas Harold Knight, I don't know, it's a little bit more consistent, I guess. Like,
yeah. And I think you learn to, just to jump in briefly, I think you learn to initiate with a premise clearer, you know, because
totally.
You have such one of the, you know, this is, I'm sure eventually we'll talk about this, but I think one of the issues, one of the trickier parts of the pattern game is trying to generate a specific clean premise and then learning how to initiate with that. But when you're interviewing somebody, the premises are bountiful. You know what I mean? I think they're more right there in front of you. And it's, you get better at, like, identifying what those are and then learning the trickier part of that, which is learning how to present them in a way that translates to your teammates and to the audience.
You know what, too, for me, it's been, like, it takes some of the... I obviously love improv, but it takes some of the mystery and, like, preciousness away from improv to do a show just for an audience. It's just like, yeah, we're here to... It's a job. Like, you make people laugh. Mm-hmm. I think, like, that can become... You know, Harold Knight can become, like, in a great way... But it's it can become so precious and so, like, religious and culty that I don't know. For me, what I do love getting away from that and just treating it more like a sport. You know, just like, let's make these people laugh. Let's do our job.
I'm gonna ask you a kind of like a fuzzy kind of question here, like a furry.
Does that mean you're gonna hug me?
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you about your predilection as a furry.
Badgers.
One of the things that I've enjoyed about watching you and playing with you is, like, I feel like I've seen you develop a very specific voice. You know, this very quick, like, hilariously kind of absurd voice. First of all, are you aware of that, and how do you think you've developed that or gotten to that point, if you have any idea?
Yes, I did it on purpose, and I read. I read a lot of Dr. Seuss. I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It definitely comes from, I always, the only way I can think about it is it came from my family, the way I, and my friends in college. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this, like, you've successfully developed a kind of, like, this is what I think is funny, and I'm sort of in touch with being able to present that in scenes.
You know what, I always, in a comedian, that Jerry Seinfeld documentary, he says, Robert Klein asks him, they're in a green room, Robert Klein's like, he's like, you were always funny, right? You were the funniest one. And, you know, growing up, you had to be. And Seinfeld's like, no, I mean, no, you really think, like, no, don't you feel like it's the opposite? Like, when you're younger, you're like, all your friends were funnier than you. And you just, the only difference is, like, they got jobs, they grew up and got jobs, and you just didn't. Like, that's how he thinks. And, like, that made so much sense to me. Like, that's how I feel about my college friends. I think, like, they were all funnier, way funnier than me. And, like, I got so much of my humor from them. But they, you know, now are, like, one's a JAG lawyer. One's a one's a youth pastor. one's a farm, like an organic farmer.
What's it like to do UCB East versus Chelsea? Because you guys are the UCB East team, but then you had an enormously long cage match run where you were doing shows at Chelsea. So every week doing, like, Thursday night show at Chelsea, Saturday night show at UCB East, you must have really felt the difference there. What is that like?
So the physical space is way different. In Chelsea, the crowd's on top of you. It feels way more personal. Yeah.
UCB, so you're a long, narrow room, so a big portion of the audience is, like, far away from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when you guys started, I think we didn't even have the mic set up. The mics were not good. The back half of the room couldn't even hear us.
Yeah.
But now that's better. And you guys, don't you get, like, a big drunk crowd Saturday nights? I feel like Saturday night East Village, you'd get, like, a...
Sometimes.
Not always?
Not always, I don't think.
No, not always.
Your
faces
are telling me I'm wrong, so I withdraw
the question. The reason is, like, because it's so deep, like, the drunks... Every once in a while, like, someone will puke in our audience, and we won't, like...
From laughing, yeah.
That's how hard we hit them. But we won't know anything about it. Like, afterwards, it'll be like, yeah, this bachelorette party, like, three of them barfed all over, you know, like, these exchange students from Madrid.
Right.
It didn't disrupt a thing, like, for us. Whereas, like... Anyone, like, any puking that happens at Chelsea, you know,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
on us. It's like, you know, all over our chest.
I completely forgot about that. Let's talk about that cage match run and what that was like.
Because I feel like
you.
In the UCB community, Airwolf was sort of like on the frontier. And like a lot of the other performers wouldn't have seen you guys the way. I don't think any of the weekend teams see each other until people come to cage match.
Yeah. Gabrus had the funniest, like, when we played Law Firm one night, it was like one of the early cage matches.
Yeah.
He, like,
John Gabrus.
Yeah. He's like super competitive.
MTV2's
Guy Code.
Mm-hmm. Substitute?
The substitute. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He came up. This is only improv nerds will get this joke. We like walk backstage into the green room, and he turns and sees us coming. He's like, "Hey, man, how are your shows at Under St. Mark's going?" Such a dick. and then he grabs Rameka, and he's like, "Hey, you probably forgot how to get to backstage from here. Let me show you." And he, like, starts giving us a tour of the theater.
Right.
He's immediately an asshole. It made me so funny.
Well,
and then we beat him by 100 votes.
Right.
You guys love that cage match run.
Oh God.
Adam Frucci was filled with light. He walks around the city like not touching the ground.
I had never seen him smile before or since.
Yeah, it's true though. You guys loved it. Why did you love it?
His bangs have never been shinier.
Yeah. What was so great about that cage match run for you?
Or was it not? Do you not care?
Are you above it? It was great. At first I did. I didn't care, and then I really started to love it.
Yeah.
I think it's because it just felt like. I don't know. I felt like people loved it. Like, it felt like, and we weren't doing anything different. It felt like we had been on the weekend. We had been doing shows for whoever the fuck comes to our shows. And then we come back to a predominantly improviser crowd at Cage Match, and they liked it. And it felt like, oh, we can still, like, we're not, like, I don't know. The people that know what we're doing still like what we're doing.
Yeah.
We haven't sold out, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it really felt good to have, like, the community like it.
What made those shows
tremendously like it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you had a hugely lopsided vote total and went on a tremendous run.
Yeah.
13 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not just like one good show, which itself is like a great thing. You did a Ruru-like run.
Yeah.
To you, we're getting to the end here, but like, what do you think made those shows so good?
Oh, man. I don't know.
I heard you guys were like...
Yeah.
Found it right away. Everybody's on top of it, heightening immediately. That's what students would say. Like, you just found it immediately and took off right away. Like, the opposite of the slow, not that there's anything wrong with a slow build dramatic show, but
right.
just constant energy. That's the vibe I got from. I didn't watch the show. I'm above it.
No, right. It wasn't that.
Okay.
It was no. It was. It was absolutely that.
Yeah, and just the more it went on, the more we sort of bonded as a team, you know. And like, I think there's something so important to that, just going out there.
Yeah,
like, we just had each other's back. That's
what it was. Like, I remember, like, it was just so fun to make. It was so fun to walk out on stage and see you guys and make each other laugh.
Yeah,
surprise each other.
Yeah,
like especially we did an event, and so that first scene, everybody's in that first scene.
Mm-hmm.
Just the absurdity of the walk on, like, especially those
event days where you get a suggestion, you do a big scene up top, and then the rest of the show is a flashback that leads up to that scene.
Yep,
right. Ideally, the first scene should have some kind of event that accumulates.
So I remember, like, early on, some of the walk on. I don't even know if this came in the event necessarily, but we had, like, there were several shows where the Quaids, where Randy and Dennis Quaid played a big part.
There were several Quaid appearances in our cage match run.
silly. I think we at least had one or two. I thought we had maybe two like Twister, like tornado
we may
themes.
Have.
I got called out for having red pubes in one show.
Oh,
just
yes.
Outright, Eddie Dunn looks me dead in the eye and starts describing my red pubic hair.
That's right.
Just shit like that.
Eddie
was,
and I almost yeah. always had a rivalry in yep. Our cage match.
Yeah, one of you was the husband, the other one was the boyfriend.
So multiple photos from cage matches where Achilles was like either coming out of somebody's vagina or like playing yep. somebody's penis.
So
like,
much id. So much like unbridled id yeah. in those shows.
All spine.
All spine. Yeah, that's the old bad man right there.
Yeah. So what is next for Tim Martin, or what are you doing now besides Airwolf and Diamond Lion? Do you have anything to plug, anything exciting coming up?
No, man, I'm just trying to, I'm just living.
Right, right, right. You've achieved a zen presence where
yeah.
you're just kind of living.
You'll hear about me.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for
yeah,
coming
it's a blast.
On.
Yeah.
Thank you,
thank
everybody.
Thank you, Sypha, for being
Thanks,
our podcast Sypha. Intern.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this first episode, Sypha?
I think it's awesome.
I just love that it's happening again. You just want this podcast happening.
Get the momentum going.
That's right.
Will, anything to plug? Anything? Where can people see
no,
you?
No, man, I got nothing happening.
Yeah, me neither.
Sypha was giving me a tattoo this entire episode.
Yeah, Tim now has a tattoo.
Yeah, we're going to put pictures of it on the website.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to UCB's Long Form Conversations.
Yes.
Look forward to this every week, we hope.
Yeah, every week.
Yeah, every week. And
every Tuesday, we're going to put a new episode.
Every yeah, right. Tuesdays, yes. All right. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Sypha. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Ian. Sypha's intern.
Sypha has an intern. The podcast intern has an intern.
Yeah, it's like a Russian doll.
There's actually 150 people. We got all a Skywalker yeah, Ranch.
They're all getting one coffee.
And they're Skywalker also all getting tattooed.
Everyone's getting tattooed.
Each person is tattooing each other like a massage circle.
How many obscure references has this podcast contained? Alan Thicke, the Quaids. Mm-hmm. What else mm-hmm. we talked about?
Owen Burke.
Besides the improv ones. Right. Oh, yeah, Owen Burke, I guess.
For New York. Not,
yeah, yeah.
Not
enough.
The world
we're
at large.
Try to jam as many weird references as we can. No. That'll be the drinking game.
Sypha and I talked about this. That's what alienates people. We can't do that.
Do you think so? I thought that's why people listen to this was for the obscure.
Improv references are good.
Yeah.
Pop culture references can be.
Oh,
alienating.
Okay.
It's okay to do. You're listening for the improv references.
Same way.
Drop Dead Fred.
We'll talk presidential debate work.
All right. We'll talk later.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Violence is spoken to be broken. Feelings are intense, words are trivial, pleasures remain so.